All right, let's dive into a case today where a handshake deal, get this, ended up leading to an $11 billion verdict.
Wow.
Texaco versus Pennzoil.
Yeah.
This case is like legendary in the legal world.
Yeah.
It really kind of reshaped how we think about, preliminary agreements, and it showed everyone just how serious the consequences can be when you're talking about something called tortious interference.
Yeah.
So picture it. It's 1984, the era of like big oil, big egos,
Right.
and Getty Oil is the prize that everybody wants. And we've got these two titans, Pennzoil and Texaco, battling it out for control. It's a pretty juicy story.
It is. It is. It's amazing how a deal that seems, so simple, made under all this pressure, a high stakes takeover can just blow up like that.
Right.
This case still gets debated in law schools
Oh,
today.
I bet.
Yeah.
So let's break down how this deal went so wrong. So Pennzoil, they're led by this guy, Hugh Liedtke. They wanted a piece of Getty Oil,
Yeah.
So they draft this memorandum of agreement, kind of like a pre-contract, if you will, outlining the terms.
Right.
They were looking at owning 30/7 of Getty Oil, which is a pretty big chunk,
Yeah.
by the end of 1984.
Yes, substantial.
But then Texaco, with John Coulikundis at the helm,
Right.
swoops in just days after Getty's board kind of gives this initial okay.
Oh, wow.
They swoop in with a higher bid, and they knew Pennzoil was already in the picture. It was a real, like, corporate power play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the real question here, and this is what made this case so interesting, is did they even have a contract in the first place?
Right.
Like, was a handshake and a memorandum of agreement, and some press releases, was that enough to be legally binding? I mean, this gets into New York contract law, which applied in this case because of a choice of law clause in the MOA.
Yeah, it's so interesting how, you think about a contract, you think about, signatures and all these very formal things, but the court really had to get into, did Pennzoil and Getty like truly intend to be bound by their agreement? Even if everything wasn't perfectly ironed out yet because things were moving so fast, how do you prove intent in that kind of environment?
Well, and that's where New York law comes in. So New York law has a couple of tests, they use to figure out intent.
Okay.
One of those tests is whether the main terms, the core terms,
Right.
are clear enough to be, enforced legally. It's like baking a cake.
Okay, I'll get
You might not know the exact brand of flour or whatever,
Right.
but you need flour, sugar, eggs, like those core
I'm
ingredients.
following you.
And the court was looking for those core ingredients in the Pennzoil Getty deal.
Got it. So let's talk about the what I'm going to call the smoking guns that ultimately convinced the court that there actually was a contract here.
Yeah.
What was the big evidence?
Well, I think first you had Getty's board resolution. So this document, it formally documented their approval of the agreement with Pennzoil,
Oh, I.
subject to a price increase, which Pennzoil ultimately agreed to. It wasn't just talk. It was a formal decision put in writing.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another big thing was just Getty's actions. They immediately started working with Pennzoil's team, started working on SEC filings for the merger.
Wow, so they're taking concrete
They
steps.
even started joint operational plans. Like they
Yeah.
were acting like it was a done deal,
Yeah.
And then there's the press release under New York law that carries like real weight.
Oh, interesting. I wouldn't think a press release would be that big of a deal.
Oh, it can be. The language was key. They used the phrase agreement in principle, and that combined with the board resolution and all of Getty's actions, that really kind of tipped the scales.
Made it seem more official than just a handshake. Okay, so the court decided, look, there's a contract here, but how do we get to this massive judgment against Texaco, like this multi-billion-dollar thing? I mean, isn't it normal for a company like Texaco to, to try and present a better offer, even if they know there's an existing deal on the table?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And it gets to the heart of why this case is so significant. So Texaco's actions, they went way beyond just, ordinary competition. They crossed this line into something called tortious interference.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, they intentionally messed with a deal that wasn't theirs to mess with. And what really made it so bad was the evidence presented to the jury. It showed Texaco wasn't just offering a better price, they were deliberately trying to torpedo Pennzoil's deal.
Oh, okay. So what kind of evidence are we talking about here?
Well, like, remember I mentioned Stop the Pennzoil Train?
Yeah.
That came straight from a Texaco internal memo.
Oh, wow.
They knew about the agreement and they were actively trying to kill it. But it gets worse. There were all these detailed phone logs showing Texaco's people negotiating with Getty during, like, what was supposed to be Pennzoil's exclusive period.
So they were going behind their back, basically?
Yeah, completely. And they knew there was an agreement. They even admitted during the trial that they knew about the press release.
Oh, wow.
The one announcing this agreement in principle. So they couldn't claim they were in the dark. Basically, they checked all the boxes for tortious interference. They targeted Pennzoil. They actively tried to stop them from, like, saving the deal. And they dangled all these incentives in front of Getty to break the agreement.
Wow. So their actions were intentional.
Yeah.
And they caused some serious damage.
They did.
So under New York law, just knowing about a deal and putting a better offer on the table, that's not enough.
Nope.
You got to prove they meant to interfere and they caused harm.
Yeah, you got it. And the jury definitely thought that Texaco did that. And the result, well, that's where we get to the record-shattering verdict. Yeah. So the jury hit Texaco with this, like, massive $10.53 billion judgment.
That's billion with a B.
Billion with a B, yeah.
Break that down for me. What exactly were those damages based on?
So you've got two kinds of damages. You have, like, compensatory damages and punitive damages.
Okay.
So the compensatory damages, those were, like, supposed to put Pennzoil back in the position that they would have been in if the deal had gone through.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right, so that involved a lot of calculations. They used something called a discounted cash flow model, you know, to estimate what Pennzoil would have earned from owning part of Getty.
Gotcha. But what about the punitive damages? I mean, those are meant to punish.
Right, exactly. Punitive damages, those are meant to, like, really hit the defendant's pocketbook.
Yep.
To discourage this kind of bad behavior in the future. And in this case, the punitive damages were calculated as a percentage of Texaco's net worth.
Oh.
So the jury was, like, sending a message here, don't mess with contracts, especially not when there are billions of dollars on the line.
So, I mean, the fallout for Texaco is pretty serious, right?
Oh, yeah. Texaco filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Wow.
Within months. It was actually, like, the first major corporation to go bankrupt directly because of a civil judgment.
That's huge.
Mm.
I mean, so this case obviously had, you know, big implications for the companies involved.
Right.
But it also, like, impacted the entire business world.
Oh, absolutely. It sent shockwaves through boardrooms and legal departments all over the place. People suddenly realized that these preliminary agreements, they could actually have some serious teeth.
Yeah.
And that tortious interference, it's not something to mess around with.
Here, so this case really just kind of reshaped the landscape of doing business, especially for, like, mergers and acquisitions.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the big changes that came about, like, directly because of this case?
Well, I think one big shift was this focus on precision and clarity.
Okay.
You know, in all agreements. Suddenly it became really important to document everything.
Yeah.
And to make sure everyone understood their commitments.
So no more just, like, casual handshake deals then?
Well, you know, not quite.
Okay.
But it definitely made companies and their lawyers a lot more cautious.
Yeah, I bet.
Right. They started, like, paying a lot more attention to how they drafted agreements.
Okay.
Making sure that the terms were clear, there were deadlines, specific consequences for breaking the deal, all that stuff.
So lawyers became even more crucial to the deal-making process.
Oh, absolutely. Texaco versus Pennzoil, it made it crystal clear that having legal counsel from the very start of negotiations, that was key.
Yeah.
You know, to make sure that the agreements were rock solid, to identify risks, all of that.
So it was a win for lawyers everywhere then.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, more importantly, I think it was a win for just clarity and fairness in business.
Right, right.
Another big development was the rise of something called deal protection measures.
Okay. I remember we touched on those earlier.
Yeah.
So these were, like, strategies to try and prevent another Texaco Pennzoil situation.
Right.
Tell me more about these deal protection measures.
Okay. So, one common measure is what they call a breakup fee.
Okay.
So this is, like, a financial penalty that one party agrees to pay if they back out of the deal.
Right.
It's, like, kind of like insurance in case somebody gets cold feet.
Yeah.
Or a better offer comes along.
Right.
You know, so it's like a financial incentive to stick with the deal.
Yeah. Okay. What are some other measures that became common?
Another one is what they call a no-shop clause.
Okay.
So this prevents a company from actively looking for offers from other potential buyers.
Oh, okay.
Once they've already agreed to a deal.
So once you've shaken hands, you can't go shopping around for something better,
right,
even if it's tempting.
Right, exactly.
It protects the original agreement.
Yeah. And these deal protection measures, I mean, they've become like standard practice in mergers and acquisitions, largely thanks to Texaco versus Pennzoil.
It's amazing how, one case can have such a ripple effect. I mean, but these lessons, they go beyond just mergers and acquisitions, right?
Yeah, definitely. The big ideas here, like clear communication,
Right.
detailed documentation, understanding that your actions have consequences.
Yeah.
You know, that applies to any kind of business transaction.
Right.
Partnerships, real estate deals, technology licensing, it's all relevant.
Yeah. So it's about respecting agreements, acting in good faith, recognizing that even those, early discussions, they can have legal consequences.
Exactly. You have to be aware that like every interaction, every email, every phone call, it could be like a step toward an actual agreement.
So it's about smart legal strategy, but also like ethical business practices.
Right.
You got to be savvy, but you also got to be responsible.
You got it. That's a great way to put it.
Okay. So we've gone through the history, the legal battles, the impact of this case, but I'm curious. I mean, is this just, a story from the past?
Yeah.
Are there any modern day situations that kind of echo what happened with Texaco and Pennzoil?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the issues at the heart of this case, they're still very much alive in the business world today, especially when you look at, technology and all these high stakes deals.
Give me an example.
Okay, so one that comes to mind right away is the clash between Twitter and Elon Musk back in 2022.
Ah, yes, the saga. I mean, how could we forget that?
Right.
It was everywhere. I mean, you got a billionaire CEO, a social media giant, a $34 billion deal that goes off the rails, lawsuits flying everywhere. It was like peak corporate drama.
It was. And while the specifics are different, there are some really interesting parallels to Texaco versus Pennzoil.
Okay, I'm all ears. How does Twitter versus Musk compare to what we've been talking about?
Well, both cases really came down to this question of, were these preliminary agreements, were they actually binding contracts?
Right.
So with Twitter, Musk initially agrees to buy the company, but then he tries to back out. And he claims it was because of concerns about fake accounts.
Right. There was a lot of back and forth about, the merger agreement and whether he had a legitimate reason to walk away.
Exactly. And just like with Texaco, the key legal question was Musk's initial agreement, was it legally enforceable,
Yeah.
even though the deal wasn't like finalized?
Right.
And the legal arguments in both cases, they revolved around similar ideas, the party's intent,
Right.
the clarity of the terms.
Right.
Were there any specific conditions that would allow somebody to back out? So different industries, but the core legal principles, they're the same.
So although the players were different and the industry was different, the fundamental legal issues were surprisingly similar.
They were, and the stakes were incredibly high in both cases.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars.
Yeah, I can only imagine the pressure and the legal maneuvering that must have been going on behind the scene.
Oh yeah, it was like a high stakes chess match
Right.
with both sides trying to outsmart the other. And in the end, Twitter was able to enforce the agreement
Yeah.
and force Musk to actually complete the acquisition.
So the Delaware Court of Chancery, which handles a lot of these big corporate disputes, they ruled that Musk's attempts to back out,
Right.
they weren't justified. He was ordered to go through with the purchase.
Right.
I mean, what's the big takeaway here? It seems like these battles over mergers and acquisitions,
Yeah.
they're just as intense and as consequential today as they were back in the 80s.
I think that's a great observation. Texaco versus Pennzoil and Twitter versus Musk, they show that even in today's world where everything's digital
Right.
and deals happen so fast, the basic principles of contract law, they still hold.
Yeah. Okay. So we've established that these issues are still very relevant.
Right.
But what else can we learn from these cases? And how does this inform how we approach, doing business today?
Well, I think, they highlight the growing importance of what's called due
Oh,
diligence,
okay.
especially when it comes to, mergers and
Remind
acquisitions.
me what due diligence is again.
Sure. So due diligence, it's basically the process of thoroughly investigating a company or an asset
Right.
before you, sign on the dotted line. It's about gathering all the information, analyzing their financials, assessing the legal risks, really understanding what shape the company's in.
Got it. So it's like doing your homework before you make a major investment.
Exactly. And, you know, in the Texaco case, if they had done more thorough due diligence, they might have been fully aware of the Pennzoil-Getty agreement.
Oh, wow.
Right. And maybe they could have avoided the whole mess.
Yeah.
And due diligence played a role in the Twitter case, too.
Okay.
One of Musk's arguments was that Twitter had misrepresented how many fake accounts they had.
Right.
But the court basically said, look, you didn't do enough due diligence to back that up.
Oh, wow.
You know, he hadn't done his homework properly.
So both of these cases really demonstrate that, you know, research and investigation are crucial, especially when you're talking about billions of dollars.
Absolutely. And this applies to any business deal, not just mergers and acquisitions.
Right.
Whether you're negotiating a contract, forming a partnership, investing in a new venture, due diligence is key.
Yeah, to protect yourself, to avoid those costly mistakes.
Exactly.
Okay. So I've got clarity, deal protection,
right,
thorough due diligence. Mm-hmm. Anything else we can learn from these landmark cases?
Well, I think they really emphasize the importance of understanding contract law.
Okay.
And the potential consequences of breaking an agreement.
Even if it's just a handshake.
Especially if it's just a handshake.
Wow.
You know, we've seen how even those seemingly informal agreements can be legally binding. And the penalties for breaching a contract, they can be really severe.
So what's the message for businesses and legal professionals today?
I think it's a message of caution, of awareness, and seeking expert legal advice when you need it.
Yeah.
You know, in today's world where business is so complex,
yeah,
it's more important than ever to really understand your rights, your obligations,
yeah,
and the potential risks involved.
Okay. I think we've really covered a lot of ground here today.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the history, the legal battles, the modern implications of these cases.
Right.
Is there anything else we can learn from Texaco versus Pennzoil and Twitter versus Musk? Any final insights you want to leave our listeners with?
The biggest takeaway for me is this. In the world of high-stakes deals, you got to assume that every email, every handshake, every conversation,
wow,
it could be a step towards a legal agreement.
That's a powerful statement. It really emphasizes, you know, we got to be mindful of what we say and what we do.
Absolutely. Deals happen fast these days.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not as formal as they used to be. But that doesn't mean the legal implications are any less significant.
So whether you're, you know, the CEO or an entrepreneur, you got to approach every interaction with, you know, a certain level of awareness.
Yeah, exactly.
And caution.
And remember, if you're ever unsure about, you know, the legal side of things,
yeah,
talk to a lawyer.
Great advice. I think we've really gotten all the juice out of these cases.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, the conversation doesn't have to end here.
Right.
These cases and the lessons they teach, they're going to be analyzed and debated for years to come.
And who knows what other high-stakes legal battles are waiting for us down the road.
That's the beauty of it all. It's
yeah,
always changing.
Right.
It's always challenging our assumptions. And it reminds us that planning, strategic thinking, understanding the law,
yeah,
it's all really important.
That's a great point to end on.
Yeah.
It's been a fascinating journey, you know, this world of corporate deal making, these
yeah,
legal battles, and the impact of Texaco versus Pennzoil and Twitter versus Musk.
Yeah, it's been great.
It's been a pleasure diving into this with you.
It has.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this intellectual adventure. We'll be back with more deep dives into the world of law and business. All right, so welcome back for the final part of our deep dive into Texaco versus Pennzoil.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, all its echoes into today's world. I mean, we've really been through it, right?
We have.
We've talked about all that high stakes drama from back in the 80s, the legal nitty gritty, and how this case changed the way deals are made today.
Mm.
But before we wrap things up, I kind of want to shift gears a little bit, you know, bring it home for our listeners.
I think that's a great idea. You know, it's one thing to understand the precedents and the business stuff.
Right.
But it's also important to think about what we can personally learn from all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially for those of us in the legal field.
Exactly.
So let's get practical then. Let's say we're sitting across from a client.
Okay.
Who's about to enter into a major transaction.
Yeah.
What are the key takeaways from these cases that we can share with them? What real world wisdom can we offer based on these cautionary tales?
Well, I think the first thing I would emphasize is clarity. I mean, you can't just assume that everyone's on the same page.
Right.
Even if they're, you know, nodding and shaking hands and all that.
So avoid ambiguity at all costs.
Yeah. Spell it out, even if it seems obvious at the time, you know? Don't rely on assumptions or informal understandings. Define your key terms. Set clear deadlines. Outline what happens if someone breaks the agreement. And most importantly, make sure everything is documented in writing, reviewed by a lawyer,
yeah,
and signed by everybody.
So you're saying, like, treat every agreement,
yeah,
even those early ones, as if they were the final contract.
Yeah.
Because as we've seen, they can be just as binding.
Exactly. And that leads to another crucial point, understanding the power of language.
Yo.
Words matter, especially in legal contexts.
We saw that, you know, firsthand in both Texaco versus Pennzoil and Twitter versus Musk. I mean, how those cases turned out really hinged on how certain words and phrases were interpreted.
Exactly. So choose your words carefully.
Right.
Avoid anything that's, you know, vague or ambiguous. Be precise and deliberate when you're drafting something.
Yeah.
And if you're ever unsure about what a term means or the implications might be, talk to a lawyer.
Okay. So clarity, precision, you know, recognizing that words have weight.
Yeah.
What else should we be telling our clients?
And this might seem obvious, but it's worth repeating. Get it in writing.
Yeah.
Don't rely on verbal agreements or those casual conversations where everyone seems to agree.
So as tempting as it might be to seal the deal with a handshake and a drink,
right,
get it down on paper.
Exactly. A written agreement, it provides a clear record,
yeah,
of the terms. It shows what the parties actually intended in case any disputes come up later.
Right, right.
It's your best protection. Memories fade.
Right.
Interpretations change over time.
Yeah. Yeah. And this documentation, I mean, this should cover every stage of the negotiation, right?
Absolutely.
Not just,
yeah,
the final agreement.
Keep a record of everything.
Bam.
Emails, meeting minutes, drafts of the agreement, any changes, any revisions. Create a paper trail. It's invaluable if you need to prove that there was an agreement.
Yeah.
Or defend yourself in court.
It's like building a legal fortress around your deal.
I like that.
Brick by brick. Document by document.
And speaking of fortresses, another key piece of advice is to establish those deal protection measures.
Right, those safeguards we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Like breakup fees, no shop clauses.
Right.
All those mechanisms to prevent someone from backing out or trying to, you know, shop for a better deal.
Exactly. These are powerful tools to make sure the deal goes through as planned and to minimize the risk of another Texaco versus Pennzoil situation.
But those need to be, you know, carefully crafted.
Oh, yeah.
Customized to the specific deal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
No, you're absolutely right. You got to consider the type of transaction, the parties involved, the risks, what everyone's hoping to get out of it.
Yeah.
It's about strategy.
Yeah.
Not just throwing in a few, you know, standard clauses.
So it's about creating a framework that protects everyone's interests.
Yeah.
And makes it less likely that problems are going to come up.
Exactly. And that's where having an experienced lawyer can really make a difference.
Yeah.
They can help you identify the right measures, make sure the language is clear and enforceable, and guide you through all the legal complexities.
Okay. So we've got clarity, documentation, deal protection measures. Anything else we should be adding to our checklist when we're advising clients?
One final point that I can't emphasize enough is due diligence.
Ah, yes, the homework.
The homework.
Right.
Right. Whether it's an acquisition, a partnership, an investment, due diligence is essential,
yeah,
for making smart decisions,
right,
avoiding costly mistakes that can come back to bite you.
It's about, you know, understanding the risks, the opportunities, verifying information, getting a clear picture of what you're getting into.
Exactly. And in today's world where information is everywhere and,
right,
deals happen so fast,
yep,
due diligence is more important than ever.
So it's not just about, you know, crunching the numbers and looking at the contract, but like digging deeper, asking the tough questions,
mm-hmm,
uncovering, mm, any potential problems before they become big problems.
Exactly. It's about being proactive, being thorough in your investigation rather than waiting till later and trying to clean up a mess.
Okay, I think we've really covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
We've talked about the legal lessons, the practical advice, the importance of planning,
yeah,
careful execution. Any final words of wisdom for our listeners, mm-hmm, as they navigate this world of deals and negotiations?
Here's a thought I always keep in mind. In the world of business, just like in life, you know, trust is important, but verification is, mm-hmm, paramount.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. It's a reminder that, you know, while we want to build strong relationships, mm-hmm, and act with integrity,
yeah,
we also have to protect ourselves, make sure our agreements are clear,
right,
they're enforceable, and they reflect what we really want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if we can learn from the mistakes of others, like in these cases we've been talking about,
yeah,
we can really increase our chances of success and avoid ending up in court.
That's the goal. That's a perfect note to end on.
Yeah.
It's been fascinating, this deep dive into the world of corporate deal making, the legal battles, the lessons of Texaco versus Pennzoil, and Twitter versus Musk.
It's been my pleasure.
It's been a pleasure exploring these issues with you and with our listeners.
Yes.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us on this journey. We hope you've gained some valuable insights that will help you navigate this complex world of law and business. Until next time, stay informed, stay engaged, and remember, always read the fine print.